Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
We might be childhood friends, and I might drive you around the bend, but I'm sure as crazy kids will work it out in the end. I might kiss you on the lips despite your nose, but I guess that's how it goes. Let's keep falling in love with our strange bedfellows.
Tanner.
What?
Closing time is about a birth, and nobody wants to talk about it.
Huh? The song?
Closing time is about
the semisonic song,
a birth, and nobody seems to care. And nobody, when I tell them about it, they still don't care. And
yeah,
what are we going to do about this? It's about a birth, it's not about leaving a bar.
I don't care. Only song about birth that I care about is Lightning Crashes by Live.
But aren't you even a little bit interested? Because I bet you thought it was about leaving the bar.
No, I only have room in my. My psyche for one song about birth, and that one song about birth is Lightning Crashes.
Why will nobody engage with me on this? Like,
because no one cares. It's not interesting.
It is interesting.
Spice it up a little bit. Spice it up a little bit.
Okay. Hey, Tanner, what do you think Closing Time's about?
Don't care.
What do you think, though? If you had to...
Bar closing.
Yeah, right? Because it's like closing time. Turn all the lights on over every boy and every girl.
You're not spicing it up. You're just making it more boring by like stretching it out. I'd like say it's about a birth, and it's about the birth
of... The bar
of
is a womb.
Barack Obama.
No. Listen. Listen to this lyric. Listen to this lyric from Closing Time. You ready?
Okay.
Yeah. Closing time. Time for you to go out to the places you will be from. Okay? That's already a little weird, right? If you're leaving a bar. Now listen to the next part of that lyric. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah.
Closing time. This room won't be open till your brothers or your sisters come. It's a womb. Okay. It's not a bar. It's a fucking womb.
Okay.
But nobody cares when I tell them this. And
yeah,
you're
included.
One of them. I told Sarah, and she was like, "Gross." I was like, "No, this is huge."
she's the one who does that.
No, but let's not. You're focusing on all the wrong things. Isn't it interesting? He wrote it about his wife's pregnancy.
All right. Well, this.
I told my friend Andreas. I told my friend Andreas this. He's a musician, and he was like, "My friend Andreas was like." Was like, yeah, that's something all musicians know. And I was like, what? He was like, yeah, all musicians know that about closing time. And I was like, okay, fine. Does everyone know?
Musicians sound obnoxious. I didn't know that, and now that I do know it, I don't care. And I'll tell you this. I'm never going to repeat that fact to anyone again in my life because you know what kind of reception it's going to get? Icy at best. No, that's not true. It'll get like,
it's interesting.
Best. It'll get icy at most commonest.
You're going to tell
it's not an interesting
fucking,
fact.
It is an interesting
Jack,
fact.
Why are you starting our romance podcast about factoids about songs that are about pregnancy? Also, here's a factoid about songs about giving birth.
Okay, fine. I thought you only cared about
Lightning Crashes by Live.
Yeah, okay.
It's about a miscarriage.
It's also about a death. The angel opens her eyes, but what happens to the old mother?
Oh, she also dies.
Yeah.
Wait, maybe the baby lives?
The baby lives. I've told you this already. I don't want to talk about it. That's not what we're here for. The baby's fine.
The mother dies.
Someone else on, like, the ward dies. We don't have time to talk about this. That's not what we're here for.
We don't have time to talk about that, but we can spend 10 minutes talking about Closing
Nobody
Time by Semisonic.
Nobody fucking cares. Either everyone I've told this to is like, yeah, I knew that. Or they're like, I didn't know that, but I don't care. And it's so interesting and surprising.
It's not.
They play it at bars at the end of the night. And it's like, why are you playing this song about a birth at the end of the night? What do you want us to do? Get pregnant? Is that what's happening?
Jack, This is a romance podcast. Each week we read a romance book and we discuss it because we are repressed Midwestern / British boys.
Bedfellows.
Who are afraid of intimacy and afraid of sex.
Yeah.
We're not telling you that you shouldn't be having sex. No. We celebrate your sexuality.
Go for it.
You're all sex pots.
Yeah. They don't like that.
Side note. Quick side note.
Yeah.
We finally caught up. We re-record these a couple weeks in advance.
Yeah, yeah.
And we finally caught up with the one where we, the episode where we started calling the listeners sex pots.
Yeah.
Pretty vocally against it.
Yeah, no, nobody likes it. But then there's going to be, there was two more episodes where we continued to do that. We're going to go back to the, we're going to go back to the drawing board with that one. Find something else.
People were pushing out bed bugs, but also no one liked bed bugs.
People
either,
didn't like
they're
that.
Like, yeah. I've had bed bugs. And
sex bugs?
Fun. Sex bugs isn't bad.
I mean, it's better than bed pots.
Yeah. They're way better than bed pots. I think maybe we can use both interchangeably.
Yeah.
Bed pots and sex bugs.
We're going to keep working on it. It's a romance podcast. We talk about romance novels. This week, we veered slightly off the beaten track.
Well, sort of. I mean, we read a romance book.
It's a romance book, but I think that, like,
literature,
by the broad definitions of romance, it fits, but by some narrower definitions of romance, such as, like, it's got to have, like, a super happy ending, and, like...
this had a happy ending.
It's happy, but it's
one of the
bittersweet.
In fact, we read Price of Salt by...
It's The Price of Salt by Patricia Highsmith.
Highsmith.
Fucking rule.
I read... She's known for such books as...
Price of Salt.
Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, really?
And
that's famous. That's Jude Law did that one. Wow.
Yeah. Jude Law did that one.
Didn't he?
I think so. Strangers on a Train, which Hitchcock turned into a wonderful film.
Well, and they did this one as a movie too. It's called Carol.
Yeah, and they've actually changed the name of the book.
Yeah.
My Kindle copy was like
this one's
Price of
Carol.
Salt, now called Carol.
Yeah.
So yeah, there was a movie with Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and
I can't help
the
you.
Woman from Lord of the Rings.
Okay. This is perfect. Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and Galadriel.
Galadriel from Lord of the Rings.
That sounds awesome, man. I would like that. I would be so disappointed. As much as I liked this, and as much as I, with the right priming, would enjoy the movie of this, if you were like, hey, do you want to watch Girl with the Dragon Tattoo meets Galadriel? I would be
like
very disappointed when it was this.
Lesbian affair road trip where they're hunted by spies.
It's your classic lesbian affair road trip.
Anyway, Patricia Highsmith is known for grim, sad books with grim, sad endings. And this apparently is the one book that she ever wrote that has a quote-unquote
quote-unquote happy ending. That's why I quibble, is because it's happy in terms of how things go with the ladies, but it's not happy in terms of how things go in the broader
for anyone else
spectrum,
for almost anyone
of even the ladies' lives.
Right. Yeah.
But we should say the book and say what happened.
Can I tell you something else?
Yeah,
another factoid about
that,
this
please,
book.
Yeah.
I crashed my car.
Yeah.
I smashed it into little bits.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
But I did smash my car. So we had to borrow my sister-in-law's car.
Yeah, we had to postpone this fucking record like 3 fucking weeks.
Yeah, once because I crashed a car and twice because my boy was sick.
Yeah.
But anyway, we borrowed my sister-in-law's car.
Yeah.
And we're borrowing it until our new one comes.
Yeah.
And it has this quirk of just taking a guess. Whenever you start playing something through Bluetooth, it displays it on the little display.
Yeah.
And if it can't figure out like what's going on, it'll just take a stab at it.
That's nice. I appreciate
so that. Every time I put this on, it was convinced I was listening to Patti Smith, because they're like
Patricia
Highsmith.
Surely
that must mean Patti Smith.
Surely not the audio
songwriter.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Which albums did they put on? Horses?
No, just this one.
Easter?
They just thought that Price of Salt was an especially long
Patti Smith. Oh, it would just say Patti Smith.
Yeah,
oh,
and have a
nice
little picture of her.
Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
Patti
good
Smith.
Book. Once again, whenever I'm in charge of picking the books instead of my wife, I accidentally pick books that one could argue
are not really romance.
May not be romance books.
Did you? So what does your wife say? Because so Tanner's wife Jamie was the romance reviewer. She's still with us, but she was the romance novel reviewer for the New York Times for some time. So she has real expertise on this topic. What is her verdict on whether this is a romance?
She's never read it.
Oh, great. So we're really
We could be. I just searched lesbian romance book because I was like,
we haven't done one yet.
We gotta give the lesbians.
Yeah, let's
a little representation here.
Yeah, and that's what they
said. And this is touted as one of the apparently. You know what Jamie did say? She said that there's not a lot of lesbian romance books. She said it's a definitely an underrepresented.
I think there's one by Casey McQuiston. I think the latest.
You said that name so fast.
Yeah, it's cool to say it fast. I think Casey McQuiston did a new, their new book is a lesbian romance, I think.
Okay. So I don't know who that is, and I haven't read it. So
you don't know who Casey McQuiston is? Casey McQuiston is the author of a novel called Red, White, and Royal Blue, which we recently read for our fucking podcast. Jesus Christ, we're supposed to be experts. Very embarrassing. Right. I'm leaving this in. We're supposed to be experts.
What is the sound I'm hearing?
What?
Fireworks. I thought Jamie was doing something upstairs.
What's up? We got to say the book. What's happening? What day is it? It's October 7th. It's Jesus, it's almost a month away from the 5th of November. It's not even close to Guy Fawkes Day.
I know, but I think here in New Britain, everyone gets very excited about it.
Yeah.
They put on their Guy Fawkes masks.
Yeah.
In the month leading up, it's like Purge.
Somebody's done their Guy Fawkes early again. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what happens. We should say the book. We should say what happens in it. Who did it last time?
You.
Okay, perfect. And it's you this time. I'm going to give you 90 seconds. I'm going to put 90 seconds on a timer during those 90 seconds. You're going to say everything that happens in this novel.
The problem is we had to postpone this like twice. So naturally, Jack, I have absolutely forgotten everyone's names. Therese and Carol. That's all I really have to care about, right?
Therese.
Therese and Carol.
Therese and Carol. Yeah. All right. Ready? 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Here we go. 1, 2, 3, go.
Therese is a set designer for plays living in New York with her boyfriend, Richard. She is having a hard time finding employment, so she goes to work at a department store. While she's there, she suggests a doll for this beautiful older woman called Carol, who's giving it to her daughter, Rindy. She sends Carol a Christmas note saying, "Hello, I am taken with you." And Carol's like, "Let's meet up." And they meet up. And it turns out Carol is getting a divorce. And she has this female friend who may be her lover. And she asks Therese to go on a nationwide road trip with her across the country. And while they're on the road trip, Therese tells Carol that she loves her, and Carol's like, "I love you too. Let's do it." It being be together. Well, and sex. And then it turns out that they're being chased by a spy, like Pink Panther. And it turns out that the spy was hired by her ex-husband, or her soon-to-be ex-husband, whose name is wild. It's like Harg.
Mm-hmm.
Like Hargavi or something.
Hargis.
He's like, I got a recording of you guys canoodling, and I'm going to send it to your husband. And she goes back to deal with it, and Therese goes back too, and they decide to break up. But then at the end, Therese realizes she loves Carol, and they get back together.
And time. But she loses the kid. She can never see the kid.
But she does lose the kid.
I mean, she can see the kid, but like
her riches.
Only once a year or something.
Right.
That's what's sad.
Yeah, that's what's sad.
It's beautiful. Bone to pick with the novel. Let's just get that out of the way. Ready? I've got a bone to pick.
Yep.
Hey Tanner, let me ask you. I'm going to ask this in the form of a question.
Yes.
Hey Tanner, what's the price of salt?
Let me consult the text real
quick. Why don't we just take a look in the book, because we just both spent a long time reading a whole fucking pretty long book about it. So why don't you just check it? I know it's been a week or so since we read it, but just I don't know, scroll through the text and see if you can fucking tell me what the actual fucking price of salt is, please.
Yeah, let me look here.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
Nothing. There's nothing in here. No wonder they changed the name of the book to fucking Carol.
And that's why they changed it to Carol. Patricia.
Because it was a lie.
Because it's a fucking lie.
And it was a lie, Patty Smith.
Yeah, Patty Smith. What's the fucking price of salt, Patty Smith? I don't know. I still don't know.
I'll tell you one thing Mr. Ripley's not so talented at. Naming books.
Shall I Google it? What?
Google what?
The.
Oh, what is the price of salt right now?
Salt.
I can just go on the Stop and Shop app and tell you.
The price of salt.
How much are you looking to buy?
Is a 1952 romance novel by Patricia Highsmith. First price. Published under the pseudonym Claire Morgan. Why?
Yeah, that.
Why would you be like, I'm going to change my name from like one kind of normal lady's name to another like very similarly normal lady's name?
You know what would be really hard?
What?
I'm discovering.
Yeah.
Is if you were someone like a researcher.
Yeah.
And just you needed to figure out what the price of salt was in 1952. Mm-hmm. It would be nearly impossible for you to.
You just
to
couldn't do
that
it
out by Googling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you just get this damn.
Because that's what
book.
I've Googled.
You'd read this. You'd be like, I'm really sad about this like kind of melancholy but beautiful romance. But yeah. I still don't know how much salt cost in.
But I'm dying to know how much salt cost in 1952. It was a great book. It's a beautiful book. If you haven't read it, please do read
it's
it. 99 cents.
It's lovely.
99 cents plus $3.99 for shipping.
Oh my God! It's just like infused.
According
with
this, to
like...
this blog, last year I bought a secondhand copy of Patricia Highsmith's iconic 1952 lesbian novel, *The Price of Salt*. I paid 99 cents plus $3.99.
Okay,
shipping.
So the price of *The Price of Salt* is 99 cents.
$4.98.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
great,
it's
book,
like,
beautiful book, but it's fraught. Like it's a set, the premise of the book is like, it's so wildly unbelievable that these two women would be together that
yeah.
literally the entire like nation
yeah
like
can't
turns on them
yeah.
and like chases them like witches.
But but they're both so cool about it. Especially, it's also like a younger woman and a significantly older woman.
Yeah. Therese is, I think,
she's like
19.
Yeah.
And Carol's in her, I think, 40s or 50s.
Yeah. It doesn't say what counted as old was different in those days, but she's, you know, married with a, like a 7-year-old child or something like that.
You know, it like to sort of lament our privilege for a moment.
Yeah.
If I may.
Yeah.
Reading this book and all the businessmen that Therese is forced to like surround herself with,
yeah,
are all these like dudes in their 40s and 50s.
Yeah, it's us.
And they're like the high powered like hotshots in New York City.
Yeah.
In 1952. And it's like, oh, that's just not the case anymore. I mean, maybe it's the case in like banks, but
yeah.
it's certainly not the case in the creative field that we're in.
Yeah, it's all like, it's like Mad Men kind of, because they're like they're like painters and like, you know, like copywriters and they're all bad in different ways. And like, this is credit to Patricia Highsmith. I guess I don't know what the atmosphere was like for or the reception would have been like for this type of novel. But like both Therese,
it's a wildly popular novel that did really well.
Therese and Carol are both like. Just very cool about being gay. Like, Therese is like, didn't know she was gay until she met Carol.
Right. She's in a like loveless relationship.
But she's
with
like
this real pill named Richard.
Once she meets Carol, she's just like, huh, okay, well, this is new.
Yeah.
And she's so cool about it. She doesn't have a major crisis.
I mean, she's
or
not
anything.
Cool about it at all. She's like, she doesn't
she's
have a
weird
crisis.
To her boyfriend.
She is sort of like a weird, like, fawning, like obsessive, like she cuts everyone out of her life.
She's mean to her boyfriend
and like all her friends.
And her friends, yeah, no, it's true.
Who are all like weirdo creep dudes who like try to smooch her,
yeah,
and stuff. She doesn't seem to have any female friends, does she? Just that old lady who works at the department store,
yeah,
who she sends postcards to,
yeah. I figure maybe before we get too much further, we should do a quick name generator just so we can kind of
perfect.
Establish ourselves,
yeah.
And
hit me.
Situate ourselves in this novel and feel like we're identifying properly with the characters. Yeah. So this name generator is, what is your... '50s lesbian repressed by the dreary capitalistic churn of a gray, smoke-filled man's world, but about to break free and soar through the brightening skies like a majestic bird. Name.
And how do we figure it out?
Here, I think I've got it. The name in this book is Therese Belivet.
Yeah. Well, that's her name. Carol's name is Carol.
Okay, sure. Okay, well, we'll...
And then there's Carol's other potential lover.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember what her name
is. What's her name? Sally?
I can't remember, man. I hate that when we just look up names from the book.
I wish one of us had it ready.
Momentum.
On deck.
That was kind of on already rolling. We stopped something that's happening and seemed to be going well in order to look up something. And then the payoff for everyone is you say a name. And everyone's like, okay, yeah, Sally, I guess. Except you're, I guess, not even going to. I don't have the book with me, so I don't.
Ready on deck. Always one of us could be.
Ugh, brutal. Brutal what's happening right now.
I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Great. Perfect. So now the payoff is going to be nobody even knows.
Okay, fine. I'll find it. Do you have to cut the dead air out? God, what a good book this was.
I know, it was good.
Carol almost guns down a detective at one point. That was cool. That would have made the book take a real action-oriented turn, you know? If she had gunned down that detective.
I can't believe you made me do this.
Do what?
I can't fucking believe. Abby? Is it Abby?
Yes.
Great. Okay. That's went just about how I expected. I cut a lot of dead air, folks, but to give you a sense of how much dead air I cut, I did do some hold music. So let's get our names.
Did you keep in the part where I was talking about how cool it would have been if she gunned down that detective?
I don't know.
Okay. Because that would have been cool.
Here's what we're going to do. I need you to go to behindthename.com.
Why? What are we doing?
We're doing a name generator, remember?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Right.
So we're going to try to find out what the most popular French women's names were in the year we were born. And so in order to do that, go to behindthename.com/top/lists/France/ the year you were born.
behindthename.com/top/lists/France/
the year you were born.
Do I choose at random?
Nope. We're going to take our birth month and pick the girl's name that corresponds with that. So that's our first name. And then for our last name, here's what I'm recommending. I think we should just go to wikipedia.org/wiki/French_wine and scroll down to the list of grape varietals they have.
Wine styles, grape varieties, and terroir.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I guess maybe pick your lucky number.
Your birthday? You already did month.
I'm going to pick my lucky number.
Okay. I'll pick my lucky number too. I don't have a lucky number.
Okay.
Because I'm not a child.
Okay. If you did have a lucky number, what do you think it would be?
69. Yep. But there's not 69 things in here.
Okay. Well, then I guess the closest to 69.
I'm just going to do my birthday.
Okay, fine. It's your lucky number, and if your lucky number isn't on this list, pick your birthday. Okay, so do you want to hear my 50s lesbian repressed by the dreary capitalistic churn of a gray smoke-filled man's world but about to break free and soar through the brightening skies like a majestic bird name?
Yes, please.
Ready?
Yes!
Céline Musca Blanc.
Ooh. I wonder if we're distantly related. Because my name is... Auriel Muscat de Hamburg.
Oh!
Yeah. We invented hamburgers.
Yeah.
The Muscat de Hamburgs.
That's nice, huh?
Yeah.
That's pretty.
That is pretty.
I feel like I identify a little bit more now with Therese.
Yes.
Young people. This book's about young people. There's, it's not. Like, Carol's not. But Therese is. And they're constantly saying shit that's like, makes me feel old.
Like what?
Let's see. I'll just pick. I have a whole segment that's called Shit Young People Say.
Okay.
Okay, here's one. Ready?
Yeah.
I like being with her. I like talking with her. I'm fond of anybody I can talk to. The phrases of some letter she had written to Carol and never mailed drifted across her mind as if to answer Richard. I feel I stand in a desert with my hands outstretched. And you are raining down upon me.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, but who would you would say that it, like up until you're like 23?
I say that to my I say something like that to my wife every night before bed.
Really? I stand in a desert with my hands outstretched and you are raining down
something
upon
along
me.
Those lines.
Along those lines. Okay.
Yeah. Just as poetic usually. It's like, you know, I feel like, you know, just off the top of my head, it's yeah. like I feel like bog.
Bog?
Like a swampy bog.
Okay, I feel like a swampy bog.
And you're like
something
Atreyu horse,
and you're sinking in me.
What's the horse is called again?
Artax.
And you're like
Artax, and you're sinking into me. That's actually yeah. really beautiful. Do you say that to your yeah. wife every night?
Every night, something along those lines.
Okay, yeah. I guess maybe I'm just.
I'll say like I'm like the Forbidden Desert, and you're like the wheelie hand guys from the Return to Oz movie.
Moving through me like the wind.
When you touch me, you dissolve into dust yourself.
Wow.
Yeah. Have you seen Return to Oz recently?
No, not recently.
Okay. And you're trying to think of one now?
Yeah, I was trying to think of one.
You know what I literally say to my wife, and it's going to make it sound like I'm some kind of monster?
Okay.
Is I have said to her.
Yeah.
As a joke.
Okay, Jesus. Are we about to get canceled?
That she's a gaping black maw and I'm a beautiful gleaming unicorn.
Well, that's so that.
Sorry, not unicorn. Pegasus. Who is swallowed up by her. And that's sort of romantic in a way, too, right?
That's kind of romantic.
Right?
Yeah.
And this mythical being, almost godlike, giving off its own ethereal light.
You know what you could
flying
say?
Flying through the sky.
Yeah, but you're saying it wrong. You should say to her, I'm like Falcor winging through
yes.
the skies, and you are the nothing.
You're the nothing.
Yeah.
Right. Like mostly a shapeless void, but can take the shape of a fearsome wolf
yeah.
when needed.
Okay, riddle me this. Here's something young people say. Ready?
Yeah.
Does she know it? Of course she knows it. Richard frowned and drew on his cigarette. Don't you think it's pretty silly? It's like a crush that schoolgirls get. You don't understand, she said. She felt so very sure of herself. I will comb you like music caught in the heads of all the trees in the forest.
It's beautiful.
But you can't say that, like, after the age of...
Oh, I say that. I say that okay. almost every day, something along those lines to my wife.
Okay. I will comb you like music caught in the heads of all the trees in the forest, you say to your wife?
Along those lines.
Along those yeah. lines. Okay. And she yeah. likes it? But it's like more...
Yeah. You know, I talk about like Entmoots.
Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Where it's like you stir something inside me like the Ents were stirred by the Entmoot.
Okay. That's nice.
Something along those lines. You know, something poetic. Just as poetic.
Just as poetic. Okay, well, I take it back.
Patricia Highsmith wrote.
Okay, yeah. Well, I felt old from this book because they're so, like, they're just, like, so in their feelings, but in a very specific way that's, like, I used to say, write shit like that down. To be fair to Patricia Highsmith, it's a beautifully written book.
Yeah. I mean, not as good, apparently not as good as what Jack used to write. Patricia Highsmith is what he's saying. Because he used to write stuff like that.
He used
that,
to write stuff like
saying.
That.
Back when he was a younger man, more virile man.
Yeah.
A more sexually explorative man.
You can call me, what's my name? Celine.
Celine. Back when he used to wear Adidas tracksuits with nothing on underneath them. And he used to exclusively go by Celine. And Celine. Carry a French press everywhere he went.
Shall we take a break?
Sure.
Hey everybody, it's Jack again with a brand new update about the delightful family mystery mobile game, June's Journey. I have been making real progress solving puzzles and getting stuff to put on my cool estate in the fun world of mystery, danger, and romance that's conjured up by June's Journey, a game set in the roaring 20s about a daring young woman named June who's traveling to her sister's estate to uncover scandalous family secrets and customizing her own luxurious estate island in the process. Tanner, unfortunately, is still pretty convinced by the ad brief we were sent that he has actually been assigned on a real secret mission
to uncover the killer of June's sister, Claire. The good news is that after some extremely frustrating conversations with the unbelievably patient people at the Central Connecticut Steamship Authority, I was able to clear up the fracas regarding the steamship that Tanner rented. But the bad news is that, if I'm reading this hastily scrawled missive correctly, he appears to have gotten himself horribly lost in a hedge maze in Würzburg, which I think is in Germany. According to the secret code on the back of the letter, which, to be clear, he's just written this part upside down, he is in good spirits and he is hot on the tail of Grandma Heath, and I shouldn't worry, but could I please send him 40 ducats in an unmarked envelope so that he can bribe the butler, which sounds both complicated and questionably legal. I'm going to keep you guys posted on this, but in the meantime, you can discover your inner detective just like I have when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. I have to go. There is apparently a carrier pigeon at the door with a new message from Tanner.
Got a hot new segment for us. You ready?
Hit me.
It is our metaphor for perfunctory, unsatisfying sex of the week.
Oh, okay. We've got a lot of these.
I want to read one that it's kind of long, but it just keeps.
Sorry, that implied that I have unsatisfying sex. I was trying to be self-deprecating.
Yeah,
like a self-deprecating joke that I am incapable.
Yeah. Of doing of a good
giving
job.
Satisfying okay. sex.
Okay.
So I just wanted to clarify that.
Perfect. Thanks. It doesn't feel like you dug yourself deeper at all. I'll just read this because it was like I started reading. I mean, this is like, you know, there's just like lots of metaphors and stuff in this one because it's like fairly literary.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is a metaphor because like the boys are bad in this. And like the only true love is the one that exists between Tevez.
Is there a single good boy?
No, they're all bad. The husband is awful. The boyfriend is awful in like a nice guy type of way.
Yeah.
Where it's like he's seems nice, but he's awful.
But I love you.
Yeah. But his name is Richard. And I was just like, oh, this feels like a metaphor. And then it just kept on being a metaphor. I'll just read it to you. Are you ready?
Yeah.
He gives her a kite. To try to like make her love
a beautiful kite,
yeah,
a work of freaking art.
He makes a kite. He's a creative professional, and then he gives it to her.
He's a painter.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Richard groaned, failing again. He was trying to get the kite up by running with it.
Yeah.
Therese, sitting on the ground with her arms around her knees, watched him put his head up and turn in all directions, as if he had lost something in the air. Here it is.
Sounding. Stark and familiar.
She got up, pointing. Yes, but it's not steady. Richard ran the kite into it anyway, and the kite sagged on its long string, then jerked up as if something had sprung it. It made a big arc, then began to climb in another direction. It's found its own wind, Therese said. Yes, but it's slow. What a gloomy gust. Can I hold it? Wait till I get it higher. Richard pumped at it with long swings of his arms, but the kite stayed at the same place in the cold, sluggish air. The golden domes of the cathedral wagged from side to side, as if the whole kite were shaking its head, saying no, and the long, limp tail followed foolishly, repeating the negation. Best we can do, Richard said. It can't carry any more string.
Yeah.
Want to take it? Richard poked the string stick into her hands, and she got to her feet. Suddenly, the kite broke its mooring in the sky and tugged sharply to get away. Therese let the stick turn fast in her hands, as long as she dared to under Richard's eyes, because the kite was still low. And now it rested again, stubbornly still. Jerk it, Richard said.
I thought you said it was a metaphor.
Keep working it up.
She did. It was like playing with a long elastic band, but the string was so long and slack now. It was all she could do to stir the kite. She pulled and pulled and pulled. Then Richard came and took it, and Therese let her arms hang. Her breath came harder, and little muscles in her arms were quivering. She sat down on the ground. She hadn't won against the kite. It hadn't done what she wanted it to do. Maybe the string's too heavy, she said. It was a new string, soft and white and fat as a worm. Okay, Patricia, yeah. I think we got it.
Yeah, got it. It reminds me of a tweet I just sent you.
Perfect.
Which I think is channeling a lot of Patricia Highsmith, if you want to
I'll take a gander. I'll take a gander. It's by someone called Sebastian Castillo on Twitter. And it says, it's Catholic canon that in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus Christ saw every sin committed by human beings, which means that he watched a guy blasting rope to Waluigi Hentai and still decided to sacrifice himself for humanity. Absolute legend.
I think it's the blasting rope part. You know? Because that's really classic. What Therese and Richard were doing out there in the Prospect Park.
Very unsuccessfully.
Pretty unsuccessfully, yeah. She also just like, she admires his kite.
Yeah, she likes
she's
the
like,
kite.
It's the most beautiful kite I've ever seen. When the string snaps and it flies away, she's like, oh,
she's really pissed. Well,
yeah,
it's another,
let's get
like,
the kite back.
This is like a good, it's getting too into the weeds, but like, it's also a metaphor for what a shithole Richard is, because he gives her the kite and she's like, this is nice. She's like really, she's not very nice to him, and she could be nicer to him, but she's really trying to like see something in him, even though she's very clearly gay.
It was like 1952. Like that's part of the problem with this time period. I was gonna say with the book, but it's really just like where we were as a nation. It's like being gay is just such a non-option at this point in time.
Yeah. So she's like, it's got to try to make it work. I should like this guy. But this is one of those times where she's like, well, this is nice. He made me a kite. And then he like insists on cutting the kite free just to like show her that he doesn't care about, or some fucking point he's making. And she's like, well, that sucked. Like, fuck this guy. Anyway.
I have an equally potent metaphor.
Okay.
I think that I would like to talk about. Real quick.
Great. I'd love to hear that.
And you know, I'll leave it up to you, Jack, to sort of explore. I mean, we can explore it together, but we'll talk about kind of what it could mean, what it all could mean.
Great.
Richard gave a hooting laugh and stood up. There's a can of corn here, and I've got lettuce for a salad, and there's bread and butter. Shall I go get some frozen pork chops? Richard reached a long arm over her shoulder and took a square of pumpernickel bread from the shelf. You call that bread? It's fungus. Look at it. Blue as a mandrel's beak. Why don't you eat bread once you buy it?
Okay.
I use that to see in the dark with. But since you don't like it, she took it away from him and dropped it in the garbage bag. That wasn't the bread I meant anyway. Show me the bread you meant.
So there's a lot of bread talk.
Lot of bread talk. And isn't that interesting, Jack?
Elaborate for me.
Oh, I wish I could.
Okay.
I wish I could. Here's what I can say, Jack.
Okay. Yeah.
Is that I've got a theory.
And what is it?
It's all bread.
You think it's all bread. Okay.
It's all bread, all the way up, all the way down. This is like page 18. You know, they were setting this up early in this book.
Okay.
They're like, there's going to be a lot of bread
there's
stuff.
There's a lot of bread stuff in this
book. It doesn't
book.
Pay off. There's not much more bread stuff after
no,
this.
No, they introduce the bread stuff and then just kind of let it go.
They hit it real
and
hard.
And it's blue. The bread is blue.
And it glows in the dark.
As a mandrel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what a mandrel is. A duck?
I think it's got a blue beak.
Something's got a blue beak.
Okay.
It's all bread.
It's all bread. That's your theory.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's thank you for adding that to the discourse here. I
want
to.
Well, I mean, what do you think?
What do I think? I think it's inconclusive. I think.
Well, I know, but explore it a little bit. A lot of stuff is inconclusive. It's our job as intellectuals, you know, to think about this stuff.
Okay.
Find the message.
I think it's some bread in the book.
A lot of bread. Especially in this one passage.
I'll look.
I'll admit that in this one passage, they really hit it, the bread thing, really hard.
They hit it hard.
They hit it super hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Makes you think, huh? Makes you consider stuff that you maybe didn't consider before.
I guess so.
It's like, what could that be a
could be
for?
Bread all the way up and all the way down.
Could be.
It could be.
Could be.
Okay. I guess we'll keep an eye on it. See if it comes up in some other books.
I think it might. I think this I'm starting to think that this isn't just contained to books. I'm starting to think that this is a reality-shaping truth, you know? This is something we're all subject to. It's like the laws of gravity, laws of physics.
Yeah.
Sorry, gravity's not a law. I think gravity's still maybe a theory. Is that possible?
I believe in it.
I think that Einstein maybe said it's just a theory.
Okay.
Because of all space-time, it's all like bendy. You know space-time?
I know about this stuff. I know about this stuff. I don't know if we have any scientists in the podcast, but could you let us know?
Or bread scientists, because we...
Yeah.
I think we're onto something here.
We're onto something.
Help exploring it.
Should we... door burns.
Oh, yes.
We'd like to find burns in the book and find a good burn in the book. I kind of did a big burn on Richard just then, I realized.
Yes, with his floppy wang.
This is floppy wang, but this is for more incisive, direct burns. There are a few burns in this book. Patricia Highsmith is a burnsmith in some ways, and it's our...
Yeah, more than Patricia Burns.
Yeah, and it's where we say the burns in the book. Tanner, do you want to go first and say what your burn of the week is?
Yep, it's but a paragraph before the bread stuff that I just read.
Perfect. Let's hear it.
Richard lay back on the studio couch. His mouth was thin and its line uneven, half of it downward slanting, giving an ambiguity to his expression, a look sometimes of humor, sometimes of bitterness, a contradiction that his rather blank and frank blue eyes did nothing to clarify. He said slowly and mockingly, "Did you go down to the Lost and Found?" "Lost. 1 pound of beefsteak." "Answers to the name? Meatball."
Okay, there's some context needed, I think, for that.
Yeah, there's some context that I was hoping if I went back far enough and started reading, I could offer that context, but not quite. Therese bought...
She brought...
A pound of beefsteak and brought
it
to...
She works in this, like, soulless job at a department store. Yeah.
That she works at, and one of the other ladies took it.
Stole it. Yeah.
Stole it out of her locker.
Yeah.
So my burn is on Therese for, you know, thinking that she would maybe find the beefsteak again.
Okay, here's my burn. Ready?
Maybe the beefsteak would go by Jake.
Beefsteak Jake. Could be beefsteak Jake.
Could be beefsteak Jake.
Beefsteak Jake. I got a burn. Ready?
Yep.
So they go on this road trip, right? And it's kind of nice. And like Richard's like, why do you want to go on a road trip with this older lady?
It's a free road trip. Who wouldn't go?
And Therese is like, I don't know. I just like her. And also, I don't like you. And he's like, yeah, but you love me though, right? And she's like, no, and I don't like you, but you can still be my boyfriend if you want to. And he's like, yeah, we're fucking gonna be together. And she's like, okay, I'm gonna go on this like 3 week road trip with this like very sexy, like enchanting, mysterious older lady that I just met. And he's like, okay. Anyway, they go on a road trip, they stay in some hotels. It's kind of like, it's unclear between them what their relationship is going to
be. Yeah, they can't quite figure it out right away. I think Teresa's is approaching it.
It seems like it's completely new to her. Carol knows what the deal is because there's this other woman, Abby, I think we've decided her name is, who's jealous, but they clearly had a relationship before. They spend some nights in some hotels, and then at one time the following thing happens, and it's my burn.
Okay.
Ready?
Yep.
"Go to sleep," Carol said.
Me? No.
Therese hoped she would not, but when she felt Carol's hand move on her shoulder, she knew she had been asleep. It was dawn now. Carol's fingers tightened in her hair. Carol kissed her on the lips, and pleasure leaped in Therese again, as if it were only a continuation of the moment when Carol had slipped her arm under her neck last night. "I love you," Therese wanted to say again, and then the words were erased by the tingling and terrifying pleasure that spread in waves from Carol's lips over her neck, her shoulders, that rushed suddenly the length of her body. Her arms were tight around Carol, and she was conscious of Carol and nothing else, of Carol's hand that slid along her ribs, Carol's hair that brushed her bare breast, and then her body, too, seemed to vanish in widening circles that leaped further and further beyond where thought could follow. While a thousand memories and moments, words, the first darling, the second time Carol had met her at the store, a thousand memories of Carol's face, her voice, moments of anger and laughter flashed like the tail of a comet across her brain. And now it was a pale blue distance in space, an expanding space in which she took flight suddenly like a long arrow. The arrow seemed to cross an impossibly wide abyss with ease, seemed to arc on in space and not quite to stop. Then she realized that she still clung to Carol, that she trembled violently, and the arrow was herself. She saw Carol's pale hair across her eyes, and now Carol's head was close against hers. And she did not have to ask if this were right. No one had to tell her, because this could not have been more right or perfect. She held Carol tighter against her and felt Carol's mouth on her own smiling mouth. Therese lay still, looking at her. At Carol's face only inches away from her, the gray eyes calm as she had never seen them, as if they retained some of the space she had just emerged from. And it seemed strange that it was still Carol's face, with the freckles, the bending blonde eyebrow that she knew, the mouth now as calm as her eyes, as Therese had seen it many times before. "My angel," Carol said, flung out of space. Therese looked up at the corners of the room that were much brighter now, at the bureau with the bulging front and the shield-shaped drawer pulls, at the frameless mirror with the beveled edge.
Jack's computer fell asleep. That's how long he's been reading. All your, like, lights dimmed.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Can I keep going?
Yeah.
Should I go back or?
I think, are we going to get a copyright strike on this? You're essentially just reading the entire book. Go ahead.
Therese looked up at the corners of the room. I'm going to go back a sentence. Therese looked up at the corners of the room that were much brighter now, at the bureau with the bulging front and the shield-shaped drawer pulls, at the frameless mirror with the beveled edge. Are you paying attention?
I was.
Okay. I need you here. I need you to react to this burn.
Yep. Is it coming?
Yeah, it's coming. What do you think? Okay. I'm not going to fucking give you a burn. It's burn of the week.
Yeah.
At the green patterned curtains that hung straight at the windows and the two gray tips of buildings that showed just above the sill, she would remember every detail of this room forever. "What town is this?" she asked. Carol laughed. "This? This is Waterloo." She reached for a cigarette. "Isn't that awful?" It's a burn on Waterloo.
Yeah, burn on Waterloo. She says, like, a moment later, she's like, "I think every state has a Waterloo."
Yeah.
And they're all as boring as this. So if you live in Waterloo, burn on you. Jack, you also, while you were reading your burn, happened to read...
It's the sexiest part of the book.
What could be considered...
The sexiest,
the one sex scene in the book.
Yeah, yeah. So normally we're a couple of prudish guys, and we endorse sexiness and doing it in a sexual way, but we don't like to talk about it, and it makes us uncomfortable. And normally we have a hit segment where we try to sanitize and bowdlerize the sexy parts of these romance books.
Is that a term you're trying to get to catch on?
We talked about
Bowdlerize? I know we talked about it, but has anyone ever used that phrase before?
Bowdler probably used it. Bowdler is...
Yeah. I wonder what to green ringerize something.
I wonder if Bowdler used it in a sexy way where he was like, "You about to get bowdlerized."
Wasn't he like a Puritan?
I don't know. I mean, maybe in the boudoir. Bowdler famously took all the sex parts out of Shakespeare, and he did go to my alma mater.
Yes, the sexless St. Andrews.
Yeah. I don't know what the green ringerize would be. It would be probably to find Jar Jar Binks
Jack texted me and my wife the other night. Sex bugs.
Yeah.
And what did you say to us?
Yeah, bed pots. That's what you get. That's what you get for not liking us calling you sex pots, sex bugs.
Here's what the text Jack sent to me the other night.
Yeah.
Bedtime convo tonight, : Who's your favorite guy in Star Wars? Jar Jar Binks. Jar Jar Binks? That's Uncle Tanner's favorite guy.
That's a conversation
now it's
I had
with Cyril's favorite guy too.
I was so surprised because often I'll ask him questions to distract him from not wanting to brush his teeth.
Yeah.
And so the one I pulled out was, who's your favorite guy in Star Wars? And very reliably, he will say Darth Vader in response to that.
You know, Darth Vader, he eradicated Darth Vader. An entire planet with billions of people on it.
No, he doesn't.
You should tell him.
He doesn't know that.
He'll change his tune on Darth Vader pretty quickly.
Well, he already has, because I asked him expecting the Darth Vader answer, and he said Jar Jar Binks, and I was like, what? What? Like, what? Why? And he just looked up at me, and he goes, that's Uncle Tanner's favorite guy.
Yeah, it is my favorite guy.
Yeah, it's cute.
So, I'm glad my influence is spreading, my dark influence. Yeah. Just like Darth Vader.
Just like Darth Vader. And this has been Dead Dog. You said your burn. I said my burn. Oh, but we're doing we can't do two prude dudes because
I tried to give us a seamless segue.
No, you didn't. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. And you never have ever been helpful with a segue in the history of your fucking life.
Big muddy boots.
Literally in the history of your life, you've never been helpful with a segue. But the thing about this book is we're used to reading romances and we wanted a little bit more, didn't we? And so we're going to have to bring out a couple guys that I don't like to bring out. I don't like I don't like them.
Yeah.
But we need them for this one.
Yeah.
And it's the two lewd dudes.
Yeah.
And we're going to sex up. And I know people like to listen to this podcast at the dinner table. But
this is a prestigious piece of literature.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think it's maybe not our place to come in as two cishet dudes.
Right.
60 years later, 70 years later.
And turn it down. Turn down the
volume.
And
sex this up.
Okay.
But here we are. We're going to do just that.
Perfect. Thanks for that intro. That really fucking put some wind in my sails.
Yeah. So,
there's
which
nothing
passage
like,
did you
there's
choose?
Nothing like the word cishet.
Which passage did you choose?
Here's the passage I've chosen for us to sex up.
Okay.
They're having brunch in the hotel, I think after the sexual encounter.
Okay.
And let's just make it sexier.
Okay.
And what's our prude dude's name?
Sexy Brunch.
What's our lewd dude's name?
I'm Horny Tanner.
I'm Horny Jack.
Yeah.
And we're going to sex this one up, and here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to start reading the passage, and any way we can find to just turn up the sex dial a few notches and make this one a little sexier.
I hate touching the sex dial.
Yeah, I don't love to, but sometimes you got to.
Yeah.
Okay, ready?
Yep.
They had old fashions in the bar of the hotel in complete silence. They had old fashions in the bar of the hotel amidst sexual grunts.
Yes, and let's change it from bar at the hotel to bar at the strip club.
Okay. They had old fashions in the bar at the strip club.
Is there a sexier drink? Sex on the beach.
They had sex on the beach.
The drink. The
bar at the strip club.
In parentheses.
Club. To the sound of sexual grunts.
Yes.
Therese asked for a second when Carol did, but Carol said she should eat something instead.
What's an aphrodisiac? Oysters.
Eat oysters instead. That's great. The waiter told Carol that the oysters were not served in the strip club bar.
What kind of strip club is this?
She wants something to eat. Carol said firmly. It's oyster.
Okay.
The dining room is across the lobby, madame. That's not very sexy.
That's not very sexy.
The the sexing room. What about the sexing room? Orgy.
Should we be leaning into cunnilingus?
Let's be careful. We don't want to get too.
Maybe it's the bartender says it's the cunnilingus room.
What about the sex room?
Red Room, right? Isn't that what
What does Fifty Shades of Grey
calls it? I think he calls it the Red Room.
Does he call it the Red Room? No, I don't think so. That's the bar at the Black Cat in DC. The Red Room. That's where the cool thing about the Red Room, and if you go to the Black Cat in DC, is that's where you go where you're like, I'm too cool to watch the band, so I'm just gonna like hang out in the Red Room bar. Nobody. This is for nobody.
Red Room.
It's a Red Room. Okay.
The Playroom.
The Playroom is across the lobby, madame. And
AKA the Red Room of Pain.
Okay. The Playroom. The Red Room of Pain is across the lobby, madame. And there's a coffee shop. And there's a Keto Nine.
Yes.
Carol, I can wait. Therese said, and we'll change that to Carol, I can't wait.
That's good.
Will you please bring me the menu? She prefers to eat here. Will you please bring me the whips and chains? She prefers to do kinky
self-flagellation here.
Flagellation here, Carol said with a glance at the waiter. The waiter hesitated. The waiter jacked off.
Yeah. That's what waiters at strip clubs do. I don't know if you've ever been to one.
Then said, yes, madam, and went to get the whips and chains.
Yeah.
While Therese ate scrambled eggs and sausage. That's pretty sexy. Carol had her third.
Yeah, drink. I can't argue with that one. That's plenty sexy already.
Finally, Carol said in a tone of hopelessness, darling, can I ask you to forgive me? That's boring. What is it you say to your wife about the swamps of Artax?
I'd say that I am a nightmarish, endless bog. And say, she is.
She is Artax. And Artax. Waiting to drown inside you.
Inside of me, yeah.
So that's that. The tone hurt Therese more than the question. I think the question's fairly hurtful, too.
Yeah.
I love you, Carol. And we'll say I French you.
Yeah, I French you.
I French you. But do you see what it means? Yes, but that moment of defeat in the car, she thought, that had only been a moment, as this time now was only a situation. I don't see why it should mean this forever.
Sexuation.
Sexuation, yeah. I don't see how this can destroy anything, she said earnestly. This is just pillow talk stuff.
Yeah.
Carol took her hand down from her face. Down from her privates.
Carol took her hand down from her face.
To her privates.
To her privates.
Yeah. And sat back. And now, in spite of the tiredness, she looked as Therese always thought of her. The eyes that could be tender and hard at once as they tested her. Fingers.
Fingers that could be tired and hard. I think maybe you want to do something a little bit more sexual.
Sexy fingers.
What do you call the passage? Geez, this is really going to test our anatomy knowledge.
Okay.
When a woman is aroused.
Okay.
And
he's Googling, folks. He's Googling. We're in real trouble now because he's Googling. He doesn't even know how to ask the question.
That can't be right.
Vas deferens?
Is it called the vas deferens?
That's a kind of thing. That's definitely a kind of thing. Nobody can
that
see you.
That can't be right. Maybe her clitoral glands hardens?
Okay.
Do we say hardens?
I don't know, man. You fucking looked it up.
Wait, for real?
Look, don't get too involved in this. Let's pick something. Glands?
Yeah, her clitoral glands.
Okay, could be tender and hard at once.
Yeah.
The intelligent red lips, strong and soft. That seems sexy enough.
That's sexy.
Though the upper lip trembled the least bit now. That seems fine.
Yep.
Do you? Therese asked. And she realized suddenly it was a question as big as the one Carol had asked her without words in the room in Waterloo. And it was reminding me of my burn on Waterloo.
Yeah.
In fact, it was the same question. And this is it. This is the end. No, I think you're right, Carol said. You made me realize it. And then made me have this
huge,
big
orgasm.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, we did it.
Let me. Okay. We did it. We sexed up that one. I'm going to take off my horny Tanner hat, which is a condom that I wear on my head.
Yeah. Yep.
Like Howie Mandel. Mm-hmm. I use my nose to blow it up. Okay. And now I'm just back to regular old unhorny Tanner.
Yeah.
Now that the two lewd dudes have come in.
The two lewd dudes really fucking
sexed it up, you know?
Yeah. They green ring-eyes that one.
Yeah, so it's the opposite of bowdlerizing.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound right.
It was pretty sexy.
I think maybe to green ring eyes is to consider a joke or statement in a social situation. Mm-hmm. Recognize that it's not a good idea to say said joke or statement, and go ahead and say it anyway.
And do it anyway. Okay, yeah, that's
that
actually pretty
right.
That
is to tannerize
something. That's the thing, yeah. Yeah, you catch yourself from the brink of cancellation.
It's not even cancellation. It's more mild than that, but it's still not great.
Yeah.
You know? That's tannerize.
That's good. Tannerize actually sounds it's a lot easier to say.
I know.
Is that all the time we have for today? I don't know. Do you have any more notes?
Do we do bread?
We did the bread thing.
We did the bread thing.
Yeah.
Okay. It's important. We should keep
it's important. We should keep an eye on it.
No, I just have my outro prepared.
Okay, perfect. All that remains is for me to say that I would like to thank you, Tanner, very specifically for bearing with me today.
Hey, you're welcome.
I would like to thank the Sex bugs
or
bed pots. You choose.
Yeah.
Let us know in the comments what you prefer.
You can use them interchangeably.
So very much for bearing with us. We do love and kiss you all the time and every day. And I would like to remind everybody, you got to subscribe to our Patreon. You have to. It's the only thing that keeps us going. It's patreon.com/BSCC podcast. And we're talking about the Sweet Valley Twins books, and we're having a fucking blast. Please, it's just $5 a month. And it's good. And rate and review our show on Apple Podcasts. Now is a good time to do it. We're gaining momentum. We're moving up the charts, and you can help us to reach more and more newer audiences who want to hear about this stuff. But we can't do it without your help. Finally, what I would like to say is you must join our Facebook group, Baby Nation, on Facebook. Everyone's nice and good in there, and nice and also very good. And you can get our merch at bit.ly/BSCC merch. All that remains is for me to say that this week we did read a novel. The novel that we read was called The Price of Salt. We still don't know the price.
A.K.A. Carol.
A.K.A. Carol. It was by Patricia Highsmith. We loved it.
A.K.A.
Highly
Patty
recommend
Smith.
It. A.K.A. Patty Smith. A.K.A. something else. Like Claire or something.
Oh, yeah.
Next week, we're going to be reading a little novel called A Scot in the Dark.
Our first sequel.
Sarah McLean.
Yes, our first sequel. We read The Rogue Not Taken. We loved it.
Yeah.
It felt like it was time. The romance genre is all about sequels.
It's all about sequels.
All about spin-offs, all about tertiary characters becoming main characters. So we're excited to read about this beefy Scotsman.
Yeah.
Who we were first introduced to in A Rogue Not Taken.
Yeah.
We'll be joined by a guest, Jack.
Secret guest.
Do you want to say who it is?
No.
You want me to?
Yeah.
My wife.
Yep.
Jamie.
Yeah.
Green ring. Green so, professionally.
Get excited for that. Tanner does the outro, so all that remains is for me to say that this week I have been Jack Alexander Shepherd.
My name is Tanner. Horny Tanner.
And
how is it possible to be podcasting when the two of us grow stronger together every day and every night? Every night was different. And every morning. Together, Jack. We possess a miracle.
Beautiful.
We might be childhood friends, and I might drive you around the bend, but I'm sure it's crazy kids who would get out in the end. I might kiss you on the lips despite your nose, but I guess that's how it goes. Let's keep falling in love with our strange bedfellows.
They had sex on the beach, the bar, the strip club, amidst the sound of sexual grunts. Therese asked for a second when Carol did.
Joan, you're a menace.
Therese asked for a second when Carol did. but Carol said she should eat oysters instead. A known aphrodisiac for sex. The waiter told Carol that oysters were not served in the strip club bar. What kind of a strip club bar doesn't sell the known sex aphrodisiac? Oysters. She wants something to eat, Carol said firmly. It's oysters.
The sexing room is across the lobby, madame, said the waiter. Oh, wait, sorry, I mean the red room.
No.
What's this thing from Fifty Shades of Grey?
The playroom. The playroom is across the lobby, madame, said the waiter. The red room of pain, I mean. And there's a cat on eye. Carol, I can't wait, Therese said. Will you please bring me the whips and chains? She prefers to do kinky self-flagellation, Carol said, with a glance at the waiter. The waiter jacked off. That's what waiters at strip clubs do. Then he said, "Yes, madame," and went to get the whips and chains. While Therese ate sexy scrambled eggs and naughty sausage, Carol had her third sex on the beach. Finally, Carol said, in a tone of hopelessness, "Darling, I am a nightmarish, endless bog. And you are Artax, waiting to drown inside of me." The tone hurt Therese more than the question, though the question was obviously quite hurtful, too. If you've seen The Neverending Story, you know that things don't end up well for Artax. "I French you, Carol," said Therese. "But do you see what it means?" "Yes. But that moment of defeat in the car," she thought, "that had only been a moment, as this time now was only a sextuation. I don't see why it should mean this forever. I don't see how this could destroy anything." This was just pillow talk. Carol took her head down from her face to her privates and sat back. And now, in spite of the tiredness, she looked as Therese always thought of her, the sexy fingers that could be tender and hard at once as they tested her. The intelligent red lips, strong and soft, though the upper lip trembled the least bit now. "Do you?" Therese asked, and she realized suddenly it was as big as the question Carol asked her without words in the room, in that garbage hole, Waterloo. In fact, it was the same question. "No, I think you're right," Carol said. "You've made me have a huge, big orgasm."
Go, 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 go. Be merry.